Hey, it's Mark Pattison back again with another awesome episode of Finding Your Summit Rewind. And this week, we're catching up with an old buddy who I've known for a long time. We talked to him about it 1 year ago, former NFL player, former Husky with me, Tom Flick. How are you doing, Tom?
Hey, Mark. Good to be with you.
We're sitting here right now broadcasting in Sun Valley, Idaho, and I'm so happy to call myself a resident, and I know that you have a place here. You've had a place here for a long time, and it was so awesome the other day going out on that mountain bike ride and getting caught up with you and Jim and just all that fellowship we had, you know, biking up that old fire road.
I loved it, and you know, every time I come here, I rediscover Sun Valley, and just because of your physical prowess, I mean, you're in great shape. I mean, I'm hitting roads and trails that I haven't hit before, so it's been fun. It was a great ride yesterday.
So, you know, when we talked a year ago, we had it was just such a fun journey of how we kind of meandered through growing up, your passion for wanting to become an NFL quarterback someday. That route led you through the University of Washington, you jumping over the fence and getting onto the field before you actually got a scholarship there. And now you're public speaking. It was funny because I'm trying to do and follow your shoes and what you're doing today. And I looked you up the other day when we said, hey, let's do this catch up. And I just typed in, you know, public speaking, top sports, motivational. I'm not sure if that's the right word. Speakers out there. And Tom Flick came up number two. And, you know, I was like, wow, you know, I know this guy. And he's kind of helping to mentor me right now. And one of the things that I saw and I read about some of the things that you talked about is move faster with less chaos. And I love that. And I just want to explore that for a minute because, you know, we were out on the mountain bikes the other day having a fantastic time. And in even though that we're moving at a certain pace, everything for me so far in Sun Valley has really been about slowing things down and not moving with such speed. And it's kind of what you're talking about in life, right?
I am. And when I speak to senior leaders and I of all different companies and industries, I think the issue is sometimes we move too fast. We're kind of on an autopilot. And that's kind of what management does, the concept of management. It's about keeping things the same, taking complex systems and people and making them run efficiently and effectively hour after hour. Yeah. The problem is we get into kind of this rhythm of just kind of doing things the same. We lose intentionality. And I think for leaders, we need to really stop and slow down and think each day, okay, what's the vision? Am I living the vision? Am I demonstrating? Am I communicating it? What's the strategy? Making sure we're on point. And so doing that allows us to move faster, but it eliminates the chaos because that's what happens a lot. And sometimes we don't realize we've gone down that trail chaotically, and then we realize we have to backtrack. We've actually lost time. It's not a time saver. It's actually chews up time. And so I'm big about speed. And with the world changing so fast, with globalization and a flat society and just the constant continuous change, we need to be able to be nimble and fast. So it's a concept that I teach leaders about how to function and how to kind of create in their behaviors that speed is critical, but there's a right way to do it and get at it.
Yeah. One of the things that I've seen, and I don't know what the right way exactly, but a benefit for me has been the solitude that I've been through for the last 10 years. But as I've retreated to the mountains, in many cases, especially on these bigger expeditions, I just got off Denali recently, there's no cell coverage. Right. And with no cell coverage comes no distractions. And I think we're all guilty of this. My daughter recently graduated from USC and the keynote speaker was Oprah. I'm not sure if you've heard her, but she was just amazing. And she just got up there and winged it. You know, she didn't have cards and all this kind of stuff. I mean, all the stuff that you do right now when you get up and you speak to people. But one of the things she had, like Oprah's 10 tips. Right, to these college kids that are going to now go out into the world and you know, do great things. And one of the things she said was, sit on your phone. You know, when it comes to dinner, sit on your phone. And, you know, there's so many of us, and I include myself in this at points in time, where, you know, you're so buried in your phone and messages and Instagramming and all these different things that you just don't have time to, as you just said, take a time out and think. Yeah. But then that's going to allow you to actually propel yourself faster going out into the future.
So true. And it's great to, you know, whatever trigger you need to have to make you do that, allow you to do that. I tell senior leaders to to stop, get a notepad, get an iPad, get something, turn off your phone, get away from your computer, and take 2 or 3 hours a week and really sit and think and contemplate and review things. And when I'm here, I'm like you, I kind of check out. But when I'm in the mountain and hiking, I don't put on tunes or anything to get me up the mountain. I take my time and I think and I ponder, I reflect. And it's a great way to get recentered. And so life slows down. The important things rise to the surface. I like to say drop everything. Just let everything fall to the ground and then think conscious about what you want to pick up and go after.
Yeah, I want to tap on that really quickly because this, I just want to tie that back to my own personal situation and you're part of this community. And, you know, part of this, the solitude and part of this exercise that you just talked about is, you know, when you're in that quiet space and you have time to think and, you know, you become, the clarity comes to the surface. And one of the things, and we talked about this because you were here a while ago, a couple months ago, 4 or 5 months ago. I'm getting lost in my time. It was 3 or 4 months ago. But you know, I ended up buying this house in Sun Valley. I knew it was just right for me. And the blessing that's come out of that move for me has now become, I've rediscovered this community that I thought I'd once lost. I mean, I haven't seen some of you guys in 20 years. Yeah. And now all of a sudden, somehow or another, we're at barbecue the other night with Jim Mora and you were there, and Drew is over there, and you know, Dennis McNamara and Hatrip. I mean, all these guys from the University of Washington. Nobody cares what anybody did in the past. We're just friends with great community.
Well, it's critical, and you got to have community. And we, I think, lots of times we get isolated, and I that's why I love coming here. It just it's a great place to get away. You know, I think as senior, you know, we talk to the people that are out there listening to this podcast, and about their life. It's irregardless of what situation. You could be a housewife, you could be a salesperson, you could be mid-management, you could be a senior leader. We need to unplug and get away. It's just critical to do that, and it's good for our health, and so we need to find these situations and make sure we fold them back into our lives.
So as you go forward now we're sitting here in July, right, as we do this pod. And we blast forward into 2018, 2019. So how do you see your path going forward? You'll continue to public speak. You're in high demand. Obviously, we know about that. But one of the things I was really, as I was listening to you and Jim talk as we were biking up, but I really felt like there's a whole lot of preparation. Jim has done that successfully in his track and coaching, and you've done that extremely well. You did that well as the leader of the University of Washington. You took it to the Rose Bowl. You went on and into the NFL, but really understanding and knowing your craft. And so I know that when you were talking about preparation is so much about the opportunity, but getting up there and really knowing your craft. As you go into the future and these other speeches you're going to do, I mean, how do you constantly reinvent yourself in terms of making it fresh?
The freshness comes from serving the client in their needs, not trying to fulfill your needs and make sure that you get these certain things. It's literally when a client gets on, if we start the conversation about how I'm going to build a talk and their strategic plan and their initiatives and how they want to implement those things, I say, I'm at your service. I mean, I'm here to learn about you. I don't come with an agenda. I come to fulfill your agenda. And as long as we're all about the other person, that's where we win, I think. And I think, you know, my agenda for the next 2018, 2019 is, I've got a real dear friend, 32 years in the NBA, former assistant head coach of the Pistons when they won the back-to-back championships, first coaching staff of the Dream Team at Olympics, you know.
Yeah.
Brendan Sir, and we're all about, and we're strategizing, maybe launching a business, but about how to just help everybody and how to make sure that we can drive this down through organizations. I'm a believer that you don't win with leadership at the top. I mentioned that last time we had an interview. I believe that you win with leadership in the middle, the ability for leaders to drive and empower people below them with the ability to lead in their situations, their environments is really the critical key in a world that's moving so fast. So we need speed, not just from the top leaders. We need speed from people throughout the organization. So how do we empower those people? So what can I do that's beyond a 90-minute or 60-minute keynote or half-day workshop or a full-day session with a senior leadership team? How do we amplify that? How do we move that through the organization? It's kind of my vision and trying to multiply what I'm trying to do right now.
That's awesome. All right, buddy. Listen, this podcast is awesome. I encourage everybody to tune in, check it out. He is Tom Flick. Tom, have a great day. And
Mark,
thank you as always. All right,
so
buddy?
So great being with you, bud.
Thank you. All right. Let's listen to the pod. Here we go. We'll Hey, this is Mark Pattison back again with another awesome episode of Finding Your Summit. And this week, I have another opportunity to talk to a guy I've known for a long time. I first met this guy, Tom Flick, when I was a freshman at the University of Washington, really lost in the program as a football player. Tom was a senior. He was our quarterback. He was the leader. He was a team captain, and he led us to the Rose Bowl down in Pasadena. And then he went on into the NFL, and we just, you know, go through and have just this amazing talk about overcoming different things that he had to do. His dad actually crashed in an airplane, was completely broken up, survived it. Tom's senior year before he had this great season. I didn't realize that because he didn't show that. He certainly played fantastic that season. His mom went through cancer, and later his dad would get Parkinson's. And Tom's entry and exit of the NFL and some Tommy John surgery, he thought he'd never play again, and things like that that he actually had to deal, go through, feel it. Certainly from his point of view, came out the other end a much better person. But I got to tell you, Tom Flick is one of those guys. He's an inspirational speaker now, speaks all over the country, more than 3,000 speeches, Google, Microsoft, Starbucks, you know, all the big boys want him. But he's one of those guys in your life that if you know Tom Flick, if you listen to Tom Flick, he makes you better. He makes you a better person. He's just one of those guys. And so I am very lucky to call him a friend. And this episode was just a ton of fun to go through and reminisce and really go through his journey of life and what special words he has to impart on all of us. So, as always, remember to rate and review. Go to iTunes, Finding Your Summit. It's happening. We appreciate it. We appreciate the love. Tell your friend, tell a buddy, and that's that. And on that note, then, let's go talk to Tom. All right, here we go. Hey, everybody, it's Mark Pattison back again with another great episode of Finding Your Summit. And this week, I've got a longtime friend, Tom Flick, joining the show. And just before, Tom, you come on, first of all, I want to say that I'm broadcasting from Hermosa Beach, California, and beaming all the way up to Redmond, Washington, which is about, 10 miles east of downtown Seattle. And I first got to know Tom a long time ago when I was a freshman, and he was the senior stud at the University of Washington on the football team, and he was our star quarterback. And since then, he's gone on and done a lot of amazing things we're going to get into: public speaking, playing in the NFL, team captain. But along with that, he's also had to overcome some things. And so the first thing is, Tom, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mark. It's great to be with you. Thanks. It's funny you brought up about your year at the University of Washington. You were a freshman when I was a senior. We used to call you Crash and Burn. I don't know if you knew that.
I do remember that.
That was your nickname. It's all the seniors. It was a very fond kind of a moniker we gave you just because you went all out. And every time you played, you'd catch it no matter what happened. And so it's great to be with you on your interview.
Yeah, no, thank you. I got to tell, I mean, this is sincere. I was up in Seattle, as I just told you before we went live here. And I was up in Snoqualmie staying with Hugh Millen. And Hugh, for those that don't know, is another quarterback that came behind Tom years later. I went to high school with them, and we were reminiscing about this association that we all have together as Husky football players. And, you know, we both agreed, it's like, if there's one guy on the planet who makes you better at who you are that you want to get to know, is Tom Flick. And we both meant that with all sincerity. And, you know, you've always been like that. I mean, this is a guy, we're talking about you now, who, when I came as a freshman, you go from being the highly prized recruit, which I was, and you were back in your day, as a senior. And as a freshman, I came in and I was really lost, right? And I wasn't physically, emotionally, spiritually ready to play. And you're one of the guys on the team that made me feel great. And, you know, you throw the ball and you wouldn't turn around. You weren't arrogant. And you had a lot of reason to be, and you weren't. And for that, I always really held close to my heart in terms of how I want to treat others going forward. So, you know, a real tribute to you, and I'm sure your upbringing and whatnot, but, you know, just thank you for that.
Thank you. Well, listen, thank you for the compliment, Mark. That means a lot to me. It really does, coming from you. And yeah, I think as we have a chance to chat here this afternoon, we'll get into kind of how we form some of those thoughts and behaviors and so forth, and how we kind of end up living those things out. And certainly through struggles and trials and tribulations, but also through good friendships. And I appreciate yours. So
yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, no, it's great. So, well, let's do that then. So let's go back just a little bit. So like all of us, you don't just fall out of a tree and you become this great football player in your course of quarterback, went on to play in the NFL. My freshman year too, I mean, what a dream season. So I go from Roosevelt High School in Seattle, and we had a pretty good team, but not a great team. And in my first year, we end up going to the Rose Bowl led by you.
playing Michigan, and what a dream experience. I couldn't believe we were standing there. But so for you growing up, I know you've got a number of siblings, brothers and sisters. I know one of them very well, Joe. What was that like for you?
Man, I loved it. You know, I'm one of seven kids. There's four boys and three girls. I'm six out of seven on the totem pole. And so when you have brothers and sisters that are good athletes ahead of you, and my dad was a skeet shooting champion in the Navy. He's a pilot, a test pilot. You know, it's just, we're gone all day. I mean, Joe's a great golfer, great tennis player, great skier. I got one that's a surfer, one's a basketball player. I love the football, you know, and I was actually a better baseball player, but I love football so much that I decided when I was in eighth grade, 13 years of age, Mark, I decided I was going to be a professional quarterback. I mean, I just set my sights on that. I gave up my favorite sport. The best sport that I played was actually baseball. I actually stopped playing it in ninth grade because I was a pitcher and I didn't want two different throwing motions, which was kind of way ahead of being committed to one sport when you're that age. You typically just played all three. And it was just a great experience, a very rich experience. And I think the neatest thing was my father, who was raised in the Depression, kind of the silent generation, was never a man that kind of demanded you to play well or had expectations. He just said, listen, just give your best effort every time you go play and enjoy the experience. And so, you know, he was a gentleman that worked 6 days a week and just a classic middle-class family. And so I had this deep love. The grace of God had a lot of great coaches along the way that just nurtured that desire in my heart. And things just turned out to be, I was drafted, I was picked in the NFL and achieved a dream. And you know what that's like. So it was a fantastic journey along the way.
Well, I think when you have that many brothers and sisters, and it doesn't always have to be like that. Maybe they're friends, good friends that you hang out with, and very competitive environment that kind of nurtures, I think, that drive and that, you know, you don't want to be left behind, right? And I'm sure that was part of that. It's interesting what you say, and you talk about your family and your dad in particular. My parents were very much the same. I just have one other sister, so I didn't grow up in a whole tribe, you know, like you did. But nonetheless, they were both school teachers and very middle class and just teaching you to do the right thing and work hard and never pressuring me to be more than what I wanted to be. Like I had to do something. And similar to you, I'm going to use a different word. You said you quit baseball. I retired from baseball when I was in the eighth grade. So maybe they threw me out. I'm not sure. But it was really, it seemed like my destiny was more bent around football, probably like you, really felt like that just came natural, more natural to me than the other sports.
Yeah, and I had a hard time hitting the curve too. I have to be honest. And if you can't hit the curve, why are you playing baseball? So I did. I love football. I love the action of football. I love the leadership role of football. I love the fact that you could walk into a huddle. I was very aware of this at a pretty young age. I told my dad, I think maybe in ninth grade, maybe 10th grade, I said, Dad, I could put a sticker on the top of everybody's helmet. It's saying two things to me when I walk inside a huddle. They're saying, please lead me or please inspire me. One of those two things are saying. And if you think about it, the job of a quarterback is focusing the attention of 10 men. And you've got all different various backgrounds. You've got black, white, socioeconomic differences, religious beliefs that are different, experiences that are different. And yet when you step inside a huddle at any level, there's got 10 sets of eyes looking at you saying, you know, where are we going? Get us someplace. Where are you taking us? And I love that aspect of the leadership aspect of playing quarterback. And that's been with me since I've been a young boy. So that's huge in my life. It's actually moved from my football playing days into my work now in corporate America. I speak on leadership and leading change, those two topics. And so that came and was born in me from a very young age playing quarterback in Little League.
Yeah, well, I can tell that because I was one of those eyeballs looking at you as a receiver, you know, looking for direction. And of course, I was just a freshman in those days, but certainly I was fortunate to play with a lot of long list of great quarterbacks from Hugh Millen to Steve Poehler to Tim Cowan to yourself, and then moving on and either practicing with guys like Warren Moon to Jim Plunkett and just a long Bobby Hebert. So there's a long list of guys. And to me, what the common thread that the guys who became great had and you have is just that very calm demeanor, yet that kind of athletic arrogance in the right way that you're going to lead us down the field and we have complete confidence that that's going to happen.
When you love to compete, when you're young, you just love to compete. And, you know, I'm not that competitive right now. I'm competitive in a certainly different way than an athletic way, but
sure.
It is. And I think we have that born in us. Most people do. I think we have that calmness that you mentioned comes about by lots of preparation, lots of being ready for your break or for your time. And I loved all aspects of playing sports. So, you know, I was in the film room and working out. And I had a unique experience, Mark. When I was in ninth grade, my high school football coach, his name is Raleigh Robbins. What a great influence in my life. For many of the listeners.
Was this Interlake?
This is Interlake High School, and your listeners can relate to somebody in their life that was a mentor, someone who inspired them, someone that they could go back right now in a split second in their mind's eye and pick that man or woman or brother, sister, mom and dad, neighbor or friend or someone who spoke into the life, who just was a role model that you wanted to live up to and aspire to be. And it was Raleigh Robbins. And before I entered Interlake High School, his dear friend was a gentleman named Bob Peck, who was the head of public relations for the Denver Broncos. So when I was in ninth grade, I flew down to Redlands, California, and I was the ball boy for the Denver Broncos during training camp. So I'd warm up the quarterbacks, I'd throw the receiver routes with the receiver's coach. I'm throwing to professional football players when I'm in ninth grade. And then you go clean the locker room, of course. You do all the dirty work. And then you stay in the dorms with all the players. You get up and stand up and sing your fight song. They made you do that when I was a ninth grade kid.
That was great.
So I've got these great experiences. But one of the running backs that was there is a guy named Floyd Little, great Hall of Famer.
Sure.
I think he's a Hall of Famer. Maybe he might not be,
yeah,
but
a great player.
And he said, Tom, here's what I'd suggest you do. Get a notepad, write down all the things that you do really well, throwing the out route, dropping back, reading things, whatever. Make another list of things you don't do very well and spend 75% of your time on the things you don't do really well. And gosh, I took that to heart in ninth grade. And I started to make the list. And I realized, you know, I throw the out route to the left and right fine, but I have a hard time getting my head around on maybe a corner route or a deep comeback. Or, you know, I started to make all these lists. You know, I'm strong in my shoulders, I'm weak in my legs. And so I started to put a lot of time and energy towards that. What were my weaknesses? I wanted to cover every weakness that I had. I wanted to make it and balance it with all my strengths. And that was a huge, huge tool for me, along with the experience of throwing to men who were professional football players. And just the confidence when these guys came back and said, hey, kid, you got a pretty good arm. So that just kind of launched me into the kind of the stratosphere as far as just my desire to play. So that's kind of the pathway.
Well, that's also, you're talking about mentorship, right? And having the opportunity to be in that kind of circumstance where you're thrust into a, well, first of all, it's your head coach at Interlake, and then having that opportunity to go down and be around those types of players and see what that's like and be inspired about where that path and that journey might take you someday. Yeah. And then having the good fortune of actually living that dream out. It wasn't just a dream. It was a reality for you. And that's awesome.
Well, it's like you summiting mountains. I mean, I'm sure you're reading and you had a chance to be with a person who summited the Seven Peaks who's blind. But those, your listeners in business, they could be a manager, a director, somebody. But there's someone who's already done the job and does it really well. Find them out. Seek them. Where are they? And get to know them. And if you can, get mentored by them or at least observe them. And I started to do that. So what do great players do? What's the habits and behaviors of really good quarterbacks? And so I started to watch them closely. And it all started that year when I was in ninth grade. So it was a great, great experience.
Well, your high school career, you know, obviously you had a very accomplished one and you guys won and you were the quarterback of the team. How many colleges were out there recruiting you?
I started getting letters in my junior season from Colorado and Stanford and SC and so forth. I was a Husky, Washington Husky, since I was a kid. I used to sneak into Husky games. My mom, catch this, if you don't think I was fanatical, they used to have exhibition teams come and play in Husky Stadium before the Seahawks came to town in 1976. And I would get my mother to drive me out to Husky Stadium really early on Saturday mornings. The game was on Sunday. And I would jump over the fence, get in Husky Stadium, and I'd wait there. And so the teams would show up to do their walkthroughs. And I would go up to the manager, the team manager of whatever visiting team, the New York Jets or Pittsburgh Steelers. And I'd say, hey, I'm the kid who won the radio contest from KGR to be your ball boy for this weekend. And so I'm here to start. Well, there was no radio contest. I just made it up, right? And the guy would go, okay, grab that box and follow me. So I'm in the locker room. So I warmed up Namath. I warmed up Bradshaw as a freshman. I was with Dan Fouts. Catch this. I was with Dan Fouts on the sidelines. Jesse Freitas was the quarterback also with him. He was on the field playing. Dan was taking stats. Of course, Dan, if you don't know who Dan Fouts is, for your listeners, Hall of Fame quarterback.
Yeah, great, great player.
And the equipment manager comes up and says, Dan, tell Tom how you read coverages. He's telling me about sky and cloud and two zone and roll zone. Well, I ended up backing the guy up in the NFL. I was Fouts' backup. And we went back and reminisced about that time. So I did all these crazy things. Another thing I did was, you know, at 2 o'clock in the morning, one time a month, every month, I would set my alarm at 2 a.m. It had to be a rainy night or I wouldn't do it. And I would get up and run 5 miles, come back and shower, go back to bed for a couple hours, go to school. This guy figured, no one else is doing this. No one else would be getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning to go run 5 miles. It'd just be insane. I'm the only insane guy here, so I'm going to go do it. And I just knew when I stepped on a field in high school, and I tried to take this over into college, that no one's prepared as much as I have been. So that's how I approach life. And it's funny, Mark, I've taken that same kind of mindset and rolled that into now in my professional career. I do lots of things. I do lots of research. I care deeply about what clients need, what they want, what they're seeking. And I don't ever bring an agenda. I'm always building talks for them specifically. And so I'm really thankful and grateful to God for just giving me that kind of a mindset to be persevere, be determined. I can't juggle five or six things. I can juggle maybe one or two things. I'm more like a plow horse, Mark. You put me on a path and I'll stay on that path and until I get it done. So that's kind of my makeup.
Yeah. You know, to me, everything you're talking about is really about being purposeful, right? Yeah. And for you, actually, I was that way and I wasn't that way, you know, for when I was growing up. Sense of, I was always out. I always had a ball in my hands, but I really hadn't figured out what discipline, hard work, and a lot of the reasons why I hadn't is because I really never had to, because I was kind of better than most people in those sports. And that didn't really kick in for me until my freshman year at the University of Washington, really understanding Don James' pyramid of success that he taught us, which is really a model that he got from John Wooden, right? About, you remember the very top was the Rose Bowl and the national championship, and down below was increase your strength and do good in classroom and all the different things that he had put. And every single week, we kind of review those different things. But the commonality of what you're talking about is, you know, I would be out in the rain throwing the ball. I'd be running the stairs. I'd be doing jump rope, all these things. I would have done it for free. And I did, you know, like you did for most of our years. But it was because of that love. And so for those people who can transition that same thought, that process, and becoming very purposeful on what they want to do in life. For me right now, it's mountain climbing. I mean, it's just like, in fact, I do pay for it. You know, I don't have sponsors. It's not a big fancy thing. These podcasts come out of my mind. You know, I love doing them and playing football and playing sports. And that was just a true, sincere love of the game. And I think because you had talent and I had a little bit of talent, that was able to take that purpose, combine it with that talent and propel us both to where we ultimately got to, which was kind of the top of the rung in terms of professional sports and being one of those guys that's out there. So I totally relate to what you're saying. It's great.
Yeah. Thank you. And yeah, it is. It's a wonderful experience. And for those of your listeners, I mean, we're inspired by things that inspire us. We love the effort and energy. I think also too, great mentors, you know, spoke into my life. I think great mentors, you had Don James as your coach as well. We got people that speak in our lives. And I think if your listeners can seek those people out, I mentioned that earlier, I think that's a critical thing. Even today, I'm trying to find mentors just because life being a solo sport's not the best way to go all the time.
No, I get that. So, okay, so let's get into the UW. So we go there and like myself, like you, you had to play behind, you had to kind of, you know, wait your turn and you finally got it. And when you got it, you seized it and you became the team captain. And now I'm a freshman and we go on and we win most of our games. We end up down at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena. Just an amazing experience. Okay, so now as a senior, right? Actually, right before you were a senior, you're about ready to go into this and you're mentally prepared and you're physically, everything's ready to go. I think I read that your father was in a horrible plane crash.
Yes.
Talk to me about that.
My dad was the chief pilot for a navigational avionics firm called Sunstrand, which built the ground proximity warning system. It's in every airline. It prevents planes flying into mountains. It's an incredible device that saved thousands and thousands of lives. It's in every aircraft around the world. And he tested that device and was part of the process with the inventor of it. And so he was testing a plane coming out of Boeing Field. I was it was about 2 weeks before training camp started my senior season. And I was at a Husky football camp. I was kind of coaching it with other coaches and players. And I saw my dad's co-pilot show up. And it was up in Everett, and I thought, man, what is he doing here? What's he here for? And I hustled over and said hi to him, and he said, hey, your dad's just been in a plane crash, and he may not live, and so I need to take you right now to Harborview. So we raced from Everett down to Harborview, went in. He was in this kind of a emergency room. I was asked to go in. My brothers and sisters were all kind of showing up, and my father actually broke his neck, his back, his arms, his ribs, his nose, shattered his leg, his hip, his pelvis. His whole forehead was flayed back. He had hundreds of stitches. I remember seeing him and just becoming nauseous just at the sight of him, just how beat up and banged up he was. And they didn't think he was going to live. He ended up going into a body cast, a full body cast for like, I'm not kidding, for probably 3 months. And by the grace of God, made it out. So training camp started. That was it. And my mind was, so it was football and my father. And
it just seems like you'd be frazzled. But I remember those times and you weren't. You somehow or another, you were able to put that in a bucket over here. I mean, this is my perception as a freshman, right? I couldn't tell any of that stuff was going on.
It was going on, but I did. Football was a great escape at that moment. I think I found solace in the fact I could get away from it for a moment. And my father struggled and for a good 2-3 months, but then finally broke out of it and just said, you know, I'm going to live. And he just was such an inspiration. I got to tell you, Mark, he was just like, just an amazing man, historically just an amazing man. But he just weathered the storm, and that was such a huge inspiration to me. Now, he battled this thing for well into my rookie season. He almost died from staph infection. My rookie training camp, they were going to fly me home and said, your dad's on his deathbed there. And so it was a long process. I remember specifically playing against Stanford. We're down in Stanford. We're marching. We're losing. Oh, actually, we're tied, I think, Mark, 24-24. If you can remember that, we got a minute to go. We're on about the 20-yard line. We made a drive. I think we had a minute, 24 seconds to go. We drove the length of the field. And as we're driving the length of the field, my father was sitting in a wheelchair at this very special place at the end of the end zone. As we marched down the field, I could see him sitting there right under the scoreboard because we're all kind of the wheelchair people were at. And every time we completed a pass or moved closer to the other end zone towards him, I could see him there.
Oh, that's great.
And it was kind of a culmination that right around that time that, hey, he's going to be okay. He's going to live.
I think Chuck kicked a field goal to win it, didn't he?
He did. He kicked a field goal with 1 second.
See, I still remember that game.
You do, yeah.
Yeah.
And then had a chance to walk out of that stadium and go see my father and just really be overjoyed to have my dad still with us. And he stayed with us for a number of years, later contracted Parkinson's disease and lived with us for the last 7 years of his life in my family's home. And if you actually could come up and say, Tom, you have a chance to exchange those 7 years for a big lump sum of money or something else, would you do it? And I would say, not in my life.
Yeah.
It was one of the greatest experiences. Was it hard? Yes. Was it difficult? Absolutely. But I would encourage any of your listeners, Mark, to never miss the opportunity if that shows up, because our parents are aging. But if they show up at your door and they need your help, we were so richly blessed by the experiences of talking to my dad and being with my father those last 7 years, as well as hopefully having his grandkids be at his knee all the time. And so finding your summit, you're talking about that, but it's always marked with these difficulties that kind of create our character and sharpen our belief system and make us kind of who we are. And I don't think, Mark, I don't think it's 6 degrees of separation. You've heard that phrase,
yeah, sure.
That term. In my life, and I'm older than you by 5-6 years, it might be 1 degree of separation. I think the one thing that you and I have in common, or anybody else, that if I could sit down and break bread with one of your listeners or something, the things that hold us together, or knit us together, are challenges or difficulties.
Mm-hmm.
We have an ailing parent. My mother-in-law, goodness sakes, my dear mother-in-law passed away just 2 months ago from leukemia. My brother Joe, who I love and you know really well, who's mm-hmm. just an inspiration to me, has Parkinson's.
Yep.
And here he calls me every Friday. He calls me if we don't talk more than that, but man, he's upbeat and he's encouraged and life is great. And it's a great, and it's not phony. It's not this fake positivity. It's just the reality that you get one day at a time. And so we're more alike than we are different.
No, I appreciate that. I actually ran into Joe in Sun Valley last April and I hadn't seen him in years. And we just had just a wonderful time. And he came over to my hotel later and we sat down and we talked about life and our two kids, both his girl, Rena, my daughter, Claudette. We played on all the same baseball, soccer. We did those things for years and years and years together. And we talked about, you know, what he was going through. But I wanted to tie one thing back together that you said a couple of minutes ago about your dad and how he was an inspiration to you, in particular at that Stanford game as you're driving down the field and you could see him kind of in the end zone and in a wheelchair down there. My sense is that in a kind of a strange twist of fate, that you may have been the inspiration for him to keep going, because while he was going through that very difficult time in that period of time, our team was rocking and rolling. I mean, we won. I can't remember what our record was that year, but we won a majority of our games. You're the starting quarterback. A lot of great things were happening for you and the team that year. And so like a lot of things, it helps you get through, right? There's sports helps people. Hey, I'm working for the living for the weekend and working for the weekend.
Yeah,
that song, right? And it's just all about that's your relief. And maybe for your dad, that's what helped him keep going and going until he finally was able to shed that skin, that cast, and get out of it and move on, right?
You make a great point, and it's very astute of you to make it. It was inspiring for him to follow the team and to watch. And, you know, we were going to the Rose Bowl, and he was all planned to, you know, we're gonna rent a motorhome and come on down. And he had staph infection and couldn't. He was actually in the hospital the day that I was playing in the Rose Bowl. But you're absolutely right about how we inspire people by what we do. And he loved everybody on the team. So, yeah, you're right. And I keep trying to take what we're talking about here and relating it to people. How do we leave this and be better human beings? How do we walk out the door from this interview or someone who's going to hear this one day and say, you know, what can I do? And I don't think we realize how we live and how we behave. We're modeling things to other people. You've heard unconditional love. I'm kind of bouncing around, but unconditional respect, how you serve people, treat people, look after people. I come from the idea of servant leadership is kind of my big thing. I think servant leadership, where you come underneath people, your job is to lift them up, remove the obstacles in their way, to achieve their opportunities and really make them, you know, it's all about them. It's not about us. We're the privileged ones who get to lead people, who get to encourage people to help them succeed in life. And that's kind of my big thrust.
Well, you know, you said something also a couple minutes ago, and then we'll move on. But I do want to touch upon it because I haven't really thought about it in this way, but you're right. And you talked about the 6 degree of separation, and now you're really talking about the 1 degree. And I think one of the reasons why these pods have resonated with so many people in a very short period of time is, of course, because we've all gone through something, right? And if you're in a room and you're going, hey, has anybody ever been through a rough time? And I've been through, you know, a divorce and my father passed away. And, you know, I've gone through my fair share of things too. And if somebody's sitting in the room and they don't raise their hand, then I think they're lying, right? And so that knot and that tie that brings everybody together is that we've all been in the room. It's just a matter of what degree of your adversity that you've had to overcome. Tom, tomorrow I'm talking to a guy that was born without any arms and legs, okay? And I ran into him at about 22,000 feet on Aconcagua down in Argentina.
Wow.
And he's literally crawling up the mountain. I'm sitting on a rock, like tired. And this guy's coming up. And already we started with 12 people. We're down to 6, right? People are being flown off left and right in high rescue helicopter. And here comes this guy, just weaving his way up, crawling. And I'm just going, I can't even believe what I'm seeing here. His name is Kyle Menard. And so anyways, we're talking to him tomorrow. But again, it's about perspective, right? Where your situation is, and then paying it forward in terms of how you can help others after you've maybe gone through something.
Interesting. No, I think fascinating stuff, Mark, what you're talking about. And I can't imagine that gentleman you're going to interview tomorrow, his ability to do that, his mindset. You know, one of the things I've learned, I put it together, a lot of my speaking is leadership, of course, but I put together executive teams. And I've noticed from my playing days, I played for 7 years and I played on a bunch of teams. I was traded around and the teams I played on weren't really good, Mark. I played on the teams that made it possible for the other teams to go to the Super Bowl. I played on those teams. But I realized, you know, I've gone back, I've looked at the teams I played on, and some of the big...
That's part of that servant leadership you're just talking about, right?
Yeah. That's true, though. But what makes a great team? You know, if you could sit back and if your listeners could kind of ponder these two questions, think of the best team you've ever been on. What did it have and what made it great? If you can think about it. And if you could cull all of those thoughts into one word, what would that one word be? And the word that I come up with is the word trust. But the trust word is not predictive trust. Let me explain what I'm trying to say. A lot of people trust is, okay, I've watched your behavior. I trust and believe that you're going to continue to act or behave that way. I've seen your performance. You're going to continue that arc of performance into the future. That's how guys get signed big contracts in the NFL, right? Had a great season next year. I think you're going to do well. The trust that I'm talking about is called a vulnerability trust. It means where you can bring your shortcomings, foibles, weaknesses to the team, and you don't lose anything for it. You don't lose any self-respect or self-esteem. You don't get crucified for it. Because what I found really happens in life is what really holds teams back is that people are too busy defending their weaknesses instead of living into their strengths. Mm. And so the great teams I've been on have been really vulnerable teams. Their guys are open. If you know anything about the Seattle Seahawks, everyone can speak their mind. Everyone can be their own person. There's guidelines and boundaries you have to stay in to keep it safe. But nonetheless, there's this kind of a boundary. And there's a reality that there's a trust. It's called vulnerability trust. So that's the big thing. And I think what's really interesting is we all have this 1 degree of separation. We all have challenges. We all have difficulties. And being able to share that with people and open up with people really creates friendships fast, really builds relationships quickly. You get behind all the stuff about posturing and about maneuvering and about what I have and what you don't have and so forth. And that all gets set aside. We get down to the nuts and bolts. You and I are really a lot alike. And we have a lot of connection. We can be friends pretty quickly here because you know what? We have these things that are in common. And typically those things in common are our challenges, our difficulties. That's why I love the title of your podcast, Finding Your Summit, because I think if we're just aware of looking for it first, that's the key, then you'll find a lot of avenues that kind of open the world up to you.
Yeah, no, that's a beautiful thing you said. And I didn't really figure any of this out till I was about 50, right?
Yeah, I understand though.
Yeah.
I'm not far behind you.
No, and I'll tell you, I had some difficulty. I was going through this rough period of time in my relationship with my now ex-wife, and I'd gotten to the top of Kilimanjaro down in Tanzania. You know, it's 19,333 feet, and now I'm coming back down, and it just like just broke down in so many different ways. And I hadn't cried since I was like 11 years old, right? And so just like the more vulnerable that I can be, it actually exudes more strength because of, and it just took me forever to understand that simple concept. And so now I've gotten to a point where I don't have a problem talking about my weaknesses or what I've gone through. And it's just amazing. As soon as I open my mouth, it happened again to me last week. I was on Rainier with some guys and I had shared some things. And the next thing, this director from NFL Networks was just gabbing away, you know, at his things he's going through. And it's just amazing when you open and when you share and they say, well, wait a minute, I've got something going on too. And they want to come back, you know? And so I don't know. It's just a deeper way of being. It's a more rich experience for me, at least in life. And I think the other point that you just brought up is that it creates that closeness. You can bridge that gap so much quicker than if you're over there trying to posture and all this stuff.
Yeah, great point. Life's good. It is. And we're human beings and we make mistakes and we have shortcomings. And the quicker we get to that acknowledgement, the happier and the more alive we become, I think. That's what God's calling us to be, is really to live this, you know, abundant life. And I'm not talking about prosperity. I'm talking about in any situation where they have difficult challenges. My brother Joe is a fantastic example. I mean, this guy's got Parkinson's disease. And I've never been around a guy that has been so upbeat and so encouraging and so just takes life on. And he's been a great role model, obviously, but just observing him has just been fascinating.
Yeah, no, he's still out there skiing the slopes. I saw him coming down the hill and he's golfing and all those. He hasn't slowed him down. So let's talk quickly about your NFL career. So...
That can be short.
Well, it is short. Mine was short. Mine was shorter. You know, I went 5, you went 7. But just like I was talking to Hugh the other night, and he was almost apologizing for not making it 10 years, but then always seemed to be behind Elway or Dan Marino or Troy Aikman or those guys. And what I told him is just like, hey, we were still, at the end of the day, you made it, and I made it, and you made it. And it's still 1% of the 1% of the 1%. And in the concept of team, unlike tennis or something, you got to have role players. And that all constitutes what a team is. If everybody was Troy Aikman, you wouldn't have a great team, right? Because you got to have your backup guys and so on and so forth.
Yeah. I mean, there's a thing that says, you know, you got to be a good follower before you can be a good leader. Have you ever heard that?
No. I love it, though.
You got to be a good follower. There's a Bible verse that says, if you're responsible in the little things, I'll make you responsible in the big things. And I've lived by that for a long time, which means, you know, you do what you say you're going to do. If your yes means yes, your no means no. If you make a mistake, admit it, apologize for it. But it's those little things that make the big difference in the world. And so, yeah, we are role players. And I was a backup. And, you know, it's a funny thing. I set goals when I was a young kid. This is fascinating. I think there's something in this, but I was so geared on my goals. I had goals and I followed them. I never had a goal. You know what my goal was, Mark, is to make it in the NFL, to be drafted in the NFL. And once I got drafted, it just kind of the wind went out from the sails. That just everything just went, ugh. And I struggled in the NFL. I just really didn't. For some reason, there was no pop. There was no like deep heart drive. I mean, I worked hard. I loved it. I was where I wanted to be.
You were in Washington, D.C., right? With the Redskins.
I was drafted by the Redskins. Joe Gibbs drafted me. I backed up Joe Theismann. But, you know, I got to tell you something. That little bit of that 1% or 10% or whatever it is, that juice, it just all of a sudden, I couldn't find it. I set my goals to be an NFL quarterback, to be drafted into the NFL, and I got drafted. And after that, I was like, whoa. So I played on 5 different teams. I was drafted, traded, released, traded, and learned a lot. And greatest part about it is I came to the knowledge of Jesus Christ as a Lord and Savior back in my 3rd year. After I was kind of getting the mud hole stomped in me, I got.
So how did that come about? Because I know I was doing some research here, and I think it was your 3rd year you came down with Tommy John's, which is essentially you're throwing your arm out, right?
Yeah, you are. And I got misdiagnosed by a New England Patriot trainer was with the Patriots. I was traded to New England my third year. And I was throwing my arm. And I said, hey, my arm's getting numb and my fingers are getting numb. And he said, well, ice it. Well, that's the one thing you don't do with Tommy John surgery. You don't ice it. It makes it worse. And they kept putting me back out there. And I came back in and said, hey, I've got an issue. And they sent me to Mass General. And they said, you got an issue. We're going to move your ulnar nerve to the other side of the bone. It's called Tommy John surgery. You're done. And I said, I'd like to get a second opinion. I flew back to Seattle to see Dr. Bramwell, our team physician. He confirmed the fact that that was the issue. Before flying back, I had a buddy call me and said, hey, I'm going to a Bible study. And I don't know if we're taking a religious thing here. And this isn't religious. I don't even like to use that word. But I went to church as a kid. I thought, hey, I'm a good dude. I don't drink. I don't smoke. I only cuss occasionally. You know, if there's a cutoff line, I'm above it. That wasn't the thinking in my brain. Yeah. And I went to this Bible study and the guy shared the gospel of why Jesus came and died and rose on our behalf to save us from our sin. And man, my heart just, you know, I was with 50 people I didn't even know in this house at the U District. And I just interrupted the guy. I said, hey, wait a minute. I got a problem. He goes, what's your problem? I said, I'm a sinner. You just talked about it. And I realized I'm a sinner. So how do I get out of this mess? And I went up and I accepted Christ in front of all these people. I just asked Jesus to forgive me. I said, I don't know who you are. I'd love it if you'd come and live in my life and change me and lead me and I'll just serve you. And man, for the first time ever in my life, just pressure went away. Because you know, as a football player, it's how you played on Friday night, Saturday afternoon, or Sunday in an NFL stadium determines how we basically live Monday through Thursday. Yep. Think about it. I mean, that's how we lived. And so it just evaporated. And so I thought, wow, this is incredible. And son of a gun, I prayed. My one prayer was, Lord, if you want me out of football, take me out of it. I could care less right now. And a week later, my arm healed.
No kidding.
Flew back to Boston. I was going in 2 days before my surgery. And all of a sudden, I had all this feeling in my hand. And I said, wait a minute. And they could actually take my pinky finger, my ring finger, and my little finger, and they would poke it to draw blood. I couldn't feel it. That was one of the tests they had to make sure you had ulnar neuritis. They would draw blood off your finger. You couldn't feel it. And so now they're poking me, and I go, whoa, I feel it. I could grip a ball. I could throw a ball. And the doctor at Mass General said, this is insane. Our team doctor said, So the Lord said, okay, I want you to play in football. I said, great, I'll go play football.
That's a crazy story.
It's a crazy story.
You can call it whatever you want to call it, but for you, there was a real story behind it.
Yeah.
You did. There was like an action reaction, right?
It was.
I mean, it's really miraculous, really. I mean, you think about it to go from, because I think most of the time you equate Tommy John surgery with baseball players, right? Pitchers.
You do. And not successful results either.
No, they're done.
They're done.
DOD. Yeah. So here you are. You have this thing. You're a quarterback. Unlike a receiver, I mean, you still need your hands and catch and run and things. But I mean, it's not like it's the one motion you need is that throwing motion. And if that's sunk
in water,
it's your bread and butter. If that's not working, you got problems.
Yeah, you got problems. And so I just started to view things differently. What happened to me more than anything, Mark, is I started to be kind of a person built for others. And what I mean by that is for the first 24 years of my life at the time, everything kind of revolved around me. I mean, I was raised by great parents, great brothers and sisters, new manners. And you would say I'm a nice guy and a mannered person. But in my heart of hearts, my true self, it was about me. And what do I get for it? How do I benefit from it? How do I make my way through this thing? What do I get? And when I came to the knowledge of Christ and the relationship, and that's why I don't like the word religion, because I'm religious about flossing my teeth, and I'm not religious about my faith. It's a relationship, just like you and I have a relationship. Mm-hmm. And so things changed. I just became a different human being. I started to realize this about other people. It's about serving other people, loving other people. And I think I became a better football player at that. I really do. I think I became a more focused, because what happened, what fell on the wayside, I became a better performer because it wasn't about my performance to satisfy 60 or 80,000 people or people that I assume I need to impress. I played for just the joy of the game and the love of for Jesus Christ to say, hey, nice effort. You know, well done, my good and faithful son. And so I became that. And then I started to lead Bible studies. I just felt this urge and would invite guys to a Bible study. And I got mentored, though. I got mentored when I got traded to, so catch this. I come to know Christ. I play out my third season. I get released. I sign as a free agent with Cleveland, right? So I get signed, Sam Rattigliano. I'm going into the Cleveland facility in the offseason in February. And there's a guy waiting for me. And his name's Ozzie Newsome, All-Pro Hall of Fame tight end, general manager of the Baltimore Ravens.
Yep.
He said, "Hey, Tom, I just wanted to meet you." I said, "Hey, Oz, you know, great to meet you." And he said, "You know, this is nice. You want to tell you something, just a few things. One is we have Bible study on Thursday nights, and we have chapel before the game. There's a bunch of us, most of the team. And on Tuesday, we get discipled by our team. You're invited to all these things to meet me for." I don't know how he knew I was a believer. He just met me there, and that was the conversation. And so we start training camp, and he drew a cross on the toe of his shoe. And I said after practice one day, I said, "What's the deal with the cross on your shoe?" And he said, "You know, I've got 30 seconds. It's hot. It's humid here in Cleveland. I'm exhausted. We're all beat. And I got 30 seconds to hear the play. And I look down at my shoe. Just reminds me of what I'm playing for.
Hmm.
You know, that Jesus went and died for me, and he died for everybody, and he loves us all, and he wants to know us." And I started to grow and grow. And so that's kind of my journey through the NFL until I got to my eighth year. And God, I was more prepared, Mark, than ever in my eighth season, but I was just mentally lost. And you know, if you're not mentally in the game,
you're done.
It's a dangerous place to be.
You can't be there.
You can't be there. And it's a scary, dangerous place. And Joe Walton, my coach, said, "Hey, you know, you're just not with us mentally." And I said, "I can't figure out why." And so I got released. So you want to hear an amazing set of events. So the season starts, right? I was released right at the end. Season starts. After the first opening day, John Robinson calls me from the Rams. He says, "Hey, Jim Everett got dinged up, our starting quarterback. Can you fly down here? And if you throw the ball well, we're going to sign you to a contract." I said, "Great, I'll be down." I threw the ball great on Tuesday. "Tom, we're going to put you up in a hotel. I want you to come to all the meetings. We're going to contract you on Friday." I said, "Great." So I go to the meetings. Friday comes, he calls me and says, "Hey, we're going to send you home because we need to activate Charlie White off the injured list." Great, got to go home. The weekend games come. Monday shows up. Houston Oilers call me. It's Jerry Glanville. He goes, "Hey, Tom, Warren Moon got dinged up. Can you fly down here?" I said, "Yeah, I'll be down there." Throw the ball Tuesday, Mark. You can kind of see a pattern happening here. He says, "Come to all the meetings. We're going to contract you on Friday." I said, "Great." I show up and he goes, "Hey, Warren's healed faster than we thought. He's going to play, so we're going to send you home." So I'm sitting on a plane in Houston ready to fly home. And I said, "Lord, obviously you don't want me to play in a uniform. You don't want me in the NFL, it seems to me." I get home and I walk into my apartment where my wife and I live, this little townhouse. And the phone rings, I'm not kidding, probably 3 hours after I'm there. And it's my brother Joe calling me. And he is crying. I've never seen my brother Joe cry. He's kind of gathering himself. And after about 30 seconds, he blurts out, "Hey, Mom's been diagnosed with cancer, pancreatic cancer. She's been given just about 3 or 4 months to live." And he hung up. That was the call. So my mom and dad were in the country of Ireland on a once-in-a-lifetime trip. We're not Irish, but they had a chance to be over there. I got on a plane the next day, got my passport, got on a plane, and flew to New York City, and then landed in Shannon, Ireland 3 days after I was left Houston. Met my father, who looked like he'd aged about 10 years, gave him a hug and a kiss, and we jumped into a car service or a taxi and drove out in the countryside where they're filmed. 1930s movie called The Quiet Man with John Wayne and Maureen O'Hara.
Mm-hmm.
Classic little Irish town. Moved into a bed and breakfast, walked a mile into town to a 3-story whitewashed hospital, and in the back room was my mom, who had tubes and stuff coming out of her after surgery. Socialized medicine, 8 people in a room. And so every day I'd show up at 8 and leave at 8, and that went on for about 10 days. About the 10th day, my mom started to become somewhat coherent. She's looking up at the ceiling and kind of a troubled look. And we'd been talking the last couple of days. And I said, "Mom, are you okay?" And she says, "No, I'm actually scared to death." I said, "What scares you?" She said, "You know, I'm going to die soon." And I pulled my chair close to her. I pulled the curtain partition around us. And I grabbed her hands. I said, "Can I ask you a question, Mom? If you're going to die tonight," I really kind of swallowed hard, Mark, on this. I said, "Do you know for certain you're going to go to heaven? If you're going to die tonight, do you know spiritually you're going to go to heaven? And if you're going to go to heaven, what would Jesus say to you? Why should I let you in, Gene? What would you say to him?" So long and short of it, I shared the gospel with my mother, not fully sure she understood the good news.
Mm-hmm.
And the nurse tapped me on the shoulder, said, "Tom, it's time for you to leave. It's 8:00. And I said, "She's coming back tomorrow." And I remember grabbing my coat and putting it on, looking at my mother, who'd kind of passed out. She was just so exhausted. She was just kind of in and out.
Yep.
And anyway, long story, cutting it short, is I walked back to bed and breakfast, came back the next day, and my mother is sitting up in her bed and she's laughing and she's crying simultaneously. And she says to my dad, and I says, "Where have you been? You're late." And it was 8:00 sharp. She says, "Come in and hear each of you and sit on each side of the bed and hold my hands and pull the curtain shut. I've got great news for you. I've got wonderful news." She said, "Last night I awoke And I simply said, Jesus, this is Gene. Would you save me? And I've been dancing with the Holy Spirit all night. I said, I know that I'm going to die, but it's okay because I'm going to heaven. I know that I have been redeemed by the blood of Christ. And she says, I just have joy in my heart because I know where I'm going. And you talk about a shocking experience.
Wow.
Of, if you want to get on the spiritual side of things, about life and how crazy things happen now and then. And my mother got to live an extra month, Mark, and she got to live 1 month extra to see our first child born.
So she came back to the States?
We flagged down a Learjet out of Tel Aviv, a hospital Learjet, that came and picked us up. We circumvented the globe, got back. She lived another month or two and then saw my son Joe born, who I named my son after, my brother Joe, and then she passed.
It's actually a really beautiful story.
It is a beautiful story. And to know the joy and just the deep, settled heart that my mother had from all of it was just a testimony to, yeah, just that God's real.
Well, not only did she get a peace of mind, obviously, but it must have given you some peace as well, right? You had a message, you shared it, and she accepted it, and good things were going to happen. Right?
Yeah, it is. It's all good. It's all good.
So let me ask you this. I was going to ask you this before you gave this story, and it's actually even more appropriate now that you shared that. And that is, and a lot of people don't understand this, but as little kids, which is really when your career started, right? So you're out there playing football and baseball and all these other sports with your siblings and your friends. And now you make it into high school. And now you and I both go on to college. And then we're both fortunate to get drafted in the NFL. And then our careers go. And so, you know, I was like 29 years old. When, you know, it was like driving a car off a cliff, right? In your case, you've got kind of this grand finale of your career is coming to an end. Your mom has cancer. And for a lot of players, the transition can be so difficult. For me, it was for about 2 years and I popped out of it, but it was hard, right? And the question is, where can you still get that same feeling and that euphoric state that you get, you know, when I'm last second jumping up, catching the touchdown, you know, the fans go crazy. You know, it's just, you can't replicate that, right? And you have to like rechannel it in other directions. I know you ultimately got into public speaking. We'll talk about that in a minute. But what was that like? I mean, because you had these powerful things hitting you all at one time.
Well, I tell you what, it's just like I've got a friend who had his wife pass just 2 months ago, and he's going on a grieving tour. And I said, what are you talking about? He says, well, for 3 years, I took care of my dear wife, Kathy. And now she's gone. And so I've got all the feelings or the memories I'm trying to get rid of are those 3 years of how hard it was and how difficult it was. I want to go back and remember the great things about us. I want old memories to come back. And he said, so I went off to Glacier National Park and I saw an old timer there. We were just kind of talking and walking. I was hiking through the park. And he said, what are you here for? I said, I'm on a grieving tour. He says, no. You're not on a grieving tour. You're on a memorial tour. You're bringing things back to life, the good things that you had. And so when I accepted Christ, I knew I was on borrowed time as far as playing. It just was crystal clear. And I had four more years to go. But I said, you know, any year I could be out of this game. Mm-hmm. And then when my mom contracted the cancer, I was under contract with the Jets. Other teams were calling me saying, we want you to come back and play. And I said, I've got no desire. I don't have any heart for it. I've lost it all. My dad and mom were married almost 50 years. My son is just born. My father's moved in with us. And so I had an impetus that was different than most people. But they say about 90% of NFL football players have a very, very difficult transition into modern world. We do. We're starting from scratch at the age of 30. And all of our peers have a 10-year head start on us in the business world.
Yeah.
And so what are we going to do and how do we fit? And plus, this is just my assessment. I think professional football players could be, or professional sport athletes, are really insecure men and women. I think we really are. I know I was, because we're so talented and gifted at doing, by the grace of God, throwing a ball, shooting a hoop, hitting a baseball, running fast, that in eighth grade, we start to be able, at least for me, I got to hand in my homework just a little bit later than everybody else, and it was okay. Or I got forgiven some things, or I could make more mistakes than the general public and get away with it. I mean, that's just the kind of the way it was. And then you move to high school, and son of a gun, people are kind of writing neat things about me. So it's got to be true because people are saying it, right?
Yeah.
So you start to get kind of this mindset that you feel a little bit entitled, a little bit privileged. It doesn't sour anything about how hard we work or the talents that God gave us and maximizing that talent through just grit and effort, because people would really have a hard time understanding how hard it is to get into the professional ranks or summit a mountain or get to the top of their careers. You know, if I said, oh, that looks easy, they'd say, you've got to be nuts. You don't know what I went through to get to this point to be this director, this manager, So it's a difficult thing. And so I think the difficulty in the transition is that psychological makeup of, hey, I've always been on top of the rung, top of the mountain. Now I've got to start over. It's very humbling.
It
really
is.
Really humbling. And a lot of guys don't find their footing. They just never find it.
So how long did it take for you to go from that understanding that you're on borrowed time, now you exit the NFL, and now you get into your public speaking? And by the way, for those who don't know, Tom's been doing this for 27 years, and now we're talking about over 3,000 different speeches, and we're talking Google and Amazon and Microsoft and all the biggies, and I'm sure there's a lot of people in between from small to medium-sized companies. But I mean, what an amazing career, but did you know that's where you wanted to go?
Oh, God, no. You talk about finding your seven. Mark, I felt a calling. I felt God calling me into this, and I was scared to death of it. I literally said, there is no way I'm going to public speak. I don't want to public speak. I could care less to public speak and forget it. I literally said, no, and I was miserable. I was literally miserable. The only time I public spoke was in the NFL where I would share after I became a believer. Some churches would ask, hey, would you come and share your testimony? And then one time I had a business client when I was in the NFL say, hey, would you come and speak to us? We're a bunch of lawyers. I said, yeah, I'll speak to you because I can make $200. I was only about the money, you know. Yeah. And even though we get drafted in the NFL, I'm sure you're like this. We didn't have two nickels to rub in college. And when you get an NFL paycheck, it just goes into a bank account and you don't really know what it means. You really don't. What really matters is how much loose change you got in your pocket.
Yep.
And I thought, I could use a couple $100. So I say yes to this law firm. I was terrible. I went in there and just was just pathetic. You know, it's like, I'm sure they thought, who in the world hired this guy? But I would share my testimony about my faith in churches. Anyway, I get called into this. And so I finally relented. I was like scared to death. And so I had a guy call me. Just catch this. Then a guy calls me. His name is Bob Newton. He was an offensive right tackle for the Seattle Seahawks in the early franchise day out of Nebraska. He was All-American out of Nebraska. He said, hey, Tom, I work with this speakers bureau, and you'd be great at this. Why don't you come and do a student assembly? Now, think about this. You got 500 or 600, 700 junior high students, high school kids who are going through puberty, who are just off the wall, and you're going to put me in front of those kids for 45 minutes. You got to be kidding me. And I said, no way. And so I'll speed the story up. I finally relented. I went, and this darndest thing happened. I addressed these kids at Cleveland High School in Seattle. First talk I ever gave, I said, hey, I just got to tell you one thing. You're more than welcome to come to my house. But if you came to my house, I got to tell you something. I treat you with great dignity and respect. You're more than welcome to come in. I'd love to have you as a guest, but I'm a guest in your school, and I need you to listen to me and respect me. And listen, I'm not going to tell you to do something. I'm not going to speak over you. I'm not going to talk down to you. I'm just going to talk to you. And would you listen to me? And the place was just, you could hear a pin drop. And as soon as I got out of there, just the Holy Spirit, I just felt like, okay, that's why I've been calling you into this. You've got a calling. Football is just a stepping stone. You're supposed to do this for your life. And so I did that. I spoke in schools in the Western United States for the next 9 years. I did a student assembly in junior high school, and college at a parent night, a teacher workshop, and an athletic talk. It's called the Winning Edge Series. And I spoke to over 1 million kids and over 350,000 parents in about 9 years. Speaking sometimes 45 times a month, I would speak.
That's a lot.
And I just learned and learned and learned and learned. And then when it got to my ninth year, Mark, it's an interesting story here. My ninth year, I felt the Holy Spirit say, I don't want you to do this anymore. There's younger kids who can do this. I want you to go speak to corporations. And I said, no, again. I said, I'm just putting myself to the lowest common denominator. I said, I'm just an ex-football player. What the heck do I know about business? So for a year, I kept speaking in schools, and I lost all my joy. The talks were still affected, but I lost all my joy. And after about a year, I said, okay, I give up.
Kind of about to win your third or fourth year in the NFL.
Exactly. It's almost exactly. The day that I gave up and surrendered and said, okay, I'll go do it. This is weird. DuPont, Fike, and Cinelec corporations contacted me. And I was scared to death. I didn't have a business talk. They said, hey, would you come and speak to our company? And they gave me dates, and I said, no, I'm booked on all those dates. I literally lied to all three of the companies because I was too afraid to go speak to them. And then I got my wits about myself, and I just said, okay, I need help. I need to think. I need to pray. And I got a mentor, and I got a gentleman named Dennis Goh, and I started to march through this process. And I called up a professor at Bellevue Community College and said, how do you negotiate contracts? I started just jumped in it just with the same fervor that I had in football. Okay, let's figure this out. And then I started working on my speaking. I started talking. I started to practice it. I started to figure out concepts. I hired a communication guy. Okay, how do you set up a speech? How do you go from point A to B, C, D? How do you open? How do you close? For about 3 months, I just put this stuff together. And then I just launched. And I started to speak to energy companies and hospitals. And all of a sudden, Boeing calls and Starbucks calls and Ritz-Carlton calls and Dell Computer. And it's just like, it's just going crazy. And it's been on that pathway ever since.
What is the core message? Or does it always evolve?
Well, it's always evolving. I speak about leadership. I speak about transformational leadership, leadership versus management, change leadership. I speak about transformation and change in leadership.
So let's specifically talk about Starbucks, right?
Okay.
So as an example, if you were to go into, I know everyone's different, right?
But you bet. Everyone's different.
Yeah, everybody's different. But we all know Starbucks. So that's why I'm just giving that example that's out there, right? And they've got corporate that's down there. And then they've got a sea of baristas and managers sprinkled throughout the world now, right? And so when you come in an organization like that, so I'm thinking like you're in this huge auditorium, or how does that all set up and how do you communicate to them?
Well, it can be a convention center or it could be a senior. I speak mostly to senior leadership teams and those types of folks. But what happens first is we send a questionnaire. What are your needs, wants, desires, challenges, pain? What's going on? Send it back to me. And once that happens, that I start to talk to the president. Like at the time it was, CEO was Howard Schultz, but president was Jim Allen and his staff. So I had a roundtable conference call with these gentlemen and ladies. Where's the pain? Where's the challenge? Let me understand it. Let me figure it out. What do you want done? And then I said, if the best could happen, tell me what it looks like. I want to know visually what you see. What are people thinking, feeling, and believing after I speak to them? What's the core message you want them to walk away with? What are one or two things that they're going to own and have the confidence to own it? And once that's done, I build a talk. I build a PowerPoint deck, which is all image-based because we learn by hearing and by seeing. Send it to them and I go to work. I just go and speak. And so that's what happens. And so I've earned, by the grace of God, a reputation of someone who does deep dives into organizations and know really who they are. So I read a book about Starbucks. I went into some of the stores. I met some of the baristas. I met a manager. I understood the third place concept. So I do that for all my clients. And that's how I think I've been fortunate enough to speak to people like NASA and all the scientists and engineers when they're changing from the space shuttle program to the Constellation program. I've spoken at the Pentagon. I get to speak to the CEOs and presidents of all these companies, and I find it fascinating. And I've just learned these men and women who rise to these great positions are just like you and me, Mark. They have challenges and difficulties and struggles. And whenever I'm there, the first thing I do is I build relationships. We'll start a conference call and someone will get right into the nuts and bolts. I'll say, can I just stop for a second? I noticed in your LinkedIn thing, John, hey, that you're from Michigan. And you know, we played Michigan.
Yeah.
And we lost to them, by the way, when I played. And I just wanted to give you that gift and thank you and say you're welcome. And they just stop in their tracks and they laugh. And
you bridge it.
It's all relationship, Mark, because these kids, they go home to have kids who struggle. They have alien parents. They got friends and neighbors. They have hobbies that we like, just like them. And I get to relationship first. And so that's been my secret.
Well, let's tie it all the way back about 45 minutes ago when we were talking about really the one degree of separation, right? And so you're really tying it through that adversity and whatever challenge they might be going through. And it's not like everybody has to have a challenge, but there's some commonality amongst everybody.
They can be joys, Mark. They could be thrilling things, exciting things. They don't have to be all challenges, but we've all got them, right?
No, we sure do. All right. Well, listen, Tom, this has been amazing getting caught up with you. I go back to what I opened with, which is I really do believe I'm a better person knowing that you are in my life. And it's been a joy to listen to your journey and where you've come. And for anybody out there, where can they find you in terms of public speaking and going in and affecting your message to them?
Mark, they can go to tomflick.com, just simply tomflick.com. And that's spelled, the last name is F like in Frank, L-I-C-K. I mean, you can go, there's videos to watch, there's programs that they can learn about. But I, you know, the speaking of the leadership and aspect is all for performance, engagement, culture. I speak to a lot of sales groups because I think selling is the ultimate leadership act. And so I'd be happy to respond to anybody. We'll send out information and just, you can also find me on LinkedIn. You can find me also on Twitter. And so happy to have people drop me a line.
Yeah, that's awesome. We're also going to put in the show notes too. So there'll be a very detailed of all your websites and or your one website and your email and places where they can connect up with you, okay?
Yeah, I got one thing, Mark, before I go, because I knew we were going to meet and I wanted to grab it. I don't think I have to apologize, but we've talked a lot of spiritual things here, but I found a Bible verse That's a cool verse, and it's for everybody who's out there, and you can take it for what it's worth, but just listen to the words, because it's about finding your summit, right?
Yeah.
It's in the book of James. It says, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face various trials of many kinds, because we know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking in anything." And it's funny, Mark, you know, the way we get to love is because we've probably dealt with not being hateful. We learn about discipline because we've been kind of lazy sometimes. Getting to these higher levels of behavior, you got to sometimes struggle through a bunch of things to get there. And I think your show and all the things you bring out and your ability to do that is just really beneficial to lots of folks. I appreciate being on your show, Mark. I really appreciate you and love you for it. So thank you.
No, thank you. And I got to tell you, I know that this has benefited a lot of people that's out there from listening to these different podcasts, from these amazing people that are doing great things like you. But I'm the guy that gets to be behind the steering wheel every week. And I get to have these types of conversations with people, again, like you. And it's just amazing. And the amount of joy. And that's the reason why I said I would have played football for nothing. And I'm willing to do these podcasts for nothing. And actually, they cost me. So it cost me to go get filled full of all these great stories and this joy. And if somebody else takes something from that, then that's an amazing thing, right? Yeah. But, you know, the amount of joy that I get and inspiration is just, I mean, I don't know how you could replace that.
Yeah. Well, you do well, Mark. You're very good at what you're doing. So thanks for having me. I appreciate it very much.
All right. He is Tom Flick. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Hey, and thank you so much for listening to the Find Your Summit podcast. We are so glad to have you along for this journey. And if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend, share it on iTunes, spread it to the planet. We're looking to broadcast this to every person that is out there because, as you know, everybody has their own summit that they're going after. If you're looking to follow my journey, you can find that through my social links on markpattisonnfl.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, Pattison, P-A-T-T-I-S-O-N, NFL.com. So, until the next podcast, just remember, clear eyes, full hearts, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion, so make it happen. Thank you. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.